Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Peter Paul Brizola. The show is The New Shadow. This is a new program. I'm still learning how to work all these little rules and regulations, if you call it that. Those of you who want to call in, it's area code 1-347-633-9620. We had some problems last week, and the second time on this particular network, I was a producer and did interviews, but it was one-on-one. This is a little different since it's internet. I'm still learning. So bear with me, and we still couldn't get our theme up and the little audio clips from our historical audio archives. Anyway, so I'll probably be repeating some of the stuff for those of you who did catch the show last time. Are part of it. I'll repeat some of the topics set because they're still relevant, and for those who are new or those who didn't, who got cut off or whatever. And again, call in if you want. I like the interchange. But today I'm going to talk about more political facts, frauds, and fictions. This is the week of, they call it Gay Pride Week or Homosexual Pride Week, depending on how you look at it. Here in California, in particular in San Francisco, this Sunday. Of course, this weekend they've all revved up. The rainbow flags are up. One of the political frauds has to deal with the rainbow flag. The rainbow flag was invented about 30 years ago in Haight-Ashbury. It was put together, like Mike Collins' guy, the Haight-Ashbury, Betsy Ross. She was the one who designed the first American flag back in the American Revolution. But the guy put it together to represent the rainbow, to cover everybody. It wasn't a homosexual, gay, lesbian, NAMBLA exclusive. It was for everybody, whatever their sexual preference, political preference, national origin, race, religion. That wasn't a requirement. It was just like a rainbow. The rainbow is over everything and everybody when you see one, not just one particular group. So that's one of the political frauds and fictions that we see and hear about constantly from the political, the homosexual, lesbian political machine. You know, for years, the gays and lesbians said, leave us alone, let us conduct our sexual practices or whatever in the privacy of our house, our apartment. So finally, they got those rights. Probably the late Prime Minister of Canada, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, made a statement that rings true. The government does not belong in the bedrooms of the nation. He was talking about Canada, of course. But that applies also, you know, across the world. And the only caveat there is, as long as consulting adults are doing whatever they want and they don't disturb the neighbors, scare the horses and set the dogs a-barking or mess with children, you know, we'll keep it in the house. But people are getting increasingly tired of crotch politics. It has costs and it has consequences. We're seeing more increases in the AIDS statistics and related communicable diseases, hepatitis, the skin-eating disease. And guess who pays for that? You people who can't or can barely afford to get your medical insurance or to keep it. So these people get priority, you know, and if they don't, they scream sexual harassment, hate crime, and all that. So remember, these agendas have consequences and costs. So we need to get back to the basic privacy, that whatever they want to do, do it in the privacy of their home and apartment, but keep it out, keep their crotch politics out of the face of the body politic. Another one of the political fictions is that Obama is the first black to occupy the White House, and there's controversy about his legitimacy even being in there. And those of you who've been following the Philip Byrd case, the Martin case in Hawaii, the DiNorio case at the U.S. Supreme Court, and now there's a growing number of congressional representatives who are suspicious about this so-called birth certificate that appeared on the Daily Kos, which incidentally is funded, connected to George Soros, the mysterious Hungarian multimillionaire or billionaire who came to this country under even more mysterious circumstances, and he funds such thing as the New American Foundation, and nobody knows what that's supposed to do. But you keep seeing these mouthpieces, these people flapping their jaws and running their mouths about various issues, and it's very suspicious. So keep that in mind, these media people who are promoting these agendas. something interesting came up on PBS, the McNeil Lehr show last night, or Jim Lehr, a former U.S. Marine. Features the PBS show, news show, and sometimes they have some very interesting things. Well, finally, they talked about at least one person, one columnist at a major newspaper, the Washington Post, yesterday or the day before, was raising this issue about Obama infatuation, and he was talking about or was referring to the people in the press, the media people, who are very slavish with their coverage and critical or non-critical of Barack Obama. And, you know, this is very dangerous because this is what happens when you don't have a media that's doing its job, the fourth estate, as it were, then all these illegalities occur and they get covered up, they get censored and suppressed. And this happened. The media was useful bringing Hitler to power in Germany. You had in the old Russia, the 1917 revolution, you had media people, and they forget. These people today forget what was done then, and then when those people were no longer useful, they disappeared. And it happens in other countries. It happened in Chile, in Argentina, wherever there a totalitarian machine is getting ready to usurp power or to start an uprising or an insurrection, they use media people. And, you know, in every successful revolution, an uprising or insurrection, there's four things that these people try to get control of immediately. The post office, which controls communications, the transportation system, the water system, and the other media. So, you know, we ought to be aware. Now, there's a book out there called The Great Influenza. I think that was the title of it. I just saw it yesterday. It's a reprint. And it's about the 1917 influenza pandemic that swept the world and the political consequences and repercussions that happened here in the United States. Remember, in 1917, those of you who remember your history or familiar with it, we had it was the end of the war just about in World War I in Europe. Europe was devastated. Russia was undergoing an upheaval, which ended in the execution or the assassination of all of the Romanovs, or the immediate family of Tsar Nicholas II. And what happened was the communists were spreading out, or people who embraced that agenda were spreading out. They were entering the United States, and Woodrow Wilson, Thomas Woodrow Wilson, he didn't use his first name, decided that these people were a threat. He had an attorney general named Mitchell Palmer, A. Mitchell Palmer. And he started this Red Squad, which is where J. Edgar Hoover, the late J. Edgar Hoover, head of lifetime head of the FBI until he died in the 70s, that's where he got his start. And they were just picking up people, foreigners primarily, people who had immigrated here legally or illegally, and if they were suspected or of disloyalty, they were packed on it without due process, without an immigration court hearing. They were packed on to ships and shipped back to whence they came or wherever the ship was going. And thousands of people were deported this way. The whole thing was illegal to begin with. And, of course, some of those people may have been Reds, but that's not the way to deal with it. And when you mistreat people who have human rights but don't have citizenship rights, it becomes easier to do it to citizens, to violate their rights, and it's happening right now. With a lot of more and more people and more law professors and people who write in some of the legal journals are raising the issue of the number of people who are innocent who have been railroaded into prison. And people don't realize that, hey, you know, a trial costs a lot of money. There are consequences to the person convicted, whether it's a legal conviction or a kangaroo court conviction. If he has a family, it disrupts his family. The family goes on welfare, or it's very hard, especially if it's a single mother. She becomes a single mother, and they have kids. It's difficult to visit the man in prison or the wife in prison. There's the cost of parole. There's the cost of medical care. And now with the Ninth Circuit's recent decision, Ninth Federal Circuit's decision out here in California and the western states, Corrections Department of the State of California has to provide adequate medical care, which the public pays for inmates of all the prisons, and that it probably extends to the county jails too, because there are violations going on there. In fact, we will bring up a court case which I found in the Military Law Journal, which is one of the most interesting law journals. Very few people read it, and there are about 60 volumes now. Comes out yearly, and there's a case up in Solano County, which is also next, there's a Solano County jail next door to the Travis Air Force Base. Travis is the last major Air Force base in California, or at least in Northern California. They closed Hamilton Air Force Base and turned it into condos. But anyway, it's famous or infamous because during the Vietnam War, there were planes coming in there every minute, and some of those planes were carrying illegal drugs. In fact, the mastermind of the illegal drug operation in Vietnam and Southeast Asia was an Army Master Sergeant who was getting ready to retire, but the feds got to him first. And I know from living in the Haight-Ashbury at that time that the drugs were coming in through body bags, and people were, drug dealers were going up. They had made their contacts, and they were going up to Travis. They knew somebody on the base, and they got the dope that way, or the hash, and brought it back to the Bay Area. So that's interesting. But anyway, when an airman or airwoman, in one case, violates the law or gets arrested, and they can be arrested by local civil authority, a local cop, but they cannot be tried unless the Air Force or the department concerned, if it's a sailor, the Secretary of the Navy, if it's an Army person, it's the Secretary of the Army, and if it's an Air Force person, the Secretary of the Air Force, gets the prior permission, and that has to be requested by the governor of the state. And so what's happening is that these airmen and airwomen who violate law are sent next door to the Solano County Jail, where one woman filed a complaint that she was being abused in the county jail by local civilian authorities of Solano County. So I think she lost that case, but there are other cases out there, one in North Carolina, here in San Francisco County, others down in San Diego County. But, you know, if you know somebody who's going into the military and it's a good vocation for people who don't know what they want to do or can't get a job and want to serve the country and are not going to go there so they can deal drugs or whatever or kill people, warn them in advance that they better be aware of their rights, because they're not warned about these things, and it's too late after it happens. And if they don't have a wealthy family or whatever, they get a public defender who's more often than not overloaded with cases. And some of these guys, they work very hard, and some of these men and women. So, you know, I respect the public defenders who work very hard, even if they have an overloaded caseload, and they don't get paid as much. A lot of people don't know this, that public defenders don't get as much money as prosecutors. And prosecutors literally and figuratively get away with murder. We'll get into that more in another show. But one of the other things that people should be aware of is that, hey, there are consequences to this. And with the states going bankrupt, you know, they're looking for the California is going to issue IOUs. But you can bet that they will not be issuing IOUs to the prison guards, which is the most powerful constituency in the state of California. And for a good reason. I mean, you don't want these guys going on, the men and women, because there are women in the men's prisons, and they are guards and sergeants and all that. You don't want them going on strike, because our prisons, which are overloaded right now, will be going up in flames like they did in New Mexico and other places. We haven't had one of those major uprisings. I think the last problem we had was in San Rafael, which is the county where Marin County, it's in Marin County, the richest county in California, where San Quentin Prison is. And about 35 years ago, was one of the prisoners, George Jackson, Black Panther, was brought to the Marin County Civic Center, where they have the Superior Court, and they set up an assassination of a judge, Judge Haley. And that is the reason today, you can blame it on the Black Panthers, that any building you go into, a government building, that they have metal detectors. They don't often, sometimes don't work, but that's the reason. And that's why we have them at airports. It's because the Black Panthers assassinated, to try to free George Jackson, they assassinated Harold Haley, judge, and I think there's a memorial to him. So you can look that up on the web. Now, not one of the other political myths we hear is Stonewall. You hear that, and I'm not talking about stonewalling, although the media and politicians stonewall the public. But Stonewall was a bar in, I think, the East Village in New York City, and it was controlled by the mafia. And in New York State, and in fact in Eastern Canada, people under 21, I think it's 18, 19 in one of the provinces, and it's 18 in New York, can drink. And they can go to bars. And, of course, kids from Vermont go to Quebec or New York, and people from around New York State go to New York to teenagers, 18-year-olds go to drink. So what happened was that night in 1969, the New York ABC decided to raid the Stonewall Bar because they were serving alcohol and were engaging in prostitution, boy prostitution, with underage kids. And so they raided the bar, and there was a riot. And so the media people who were concerned with pushing the gay agenda, the homosexual agenda, because I'm getting flack about this from Europeans that we don't understand what you mean by gay. It means something different in our dictionary. But gay used to be a term when I was growing up in the 50s that meant, hey, he's a nice person. He's a fun person to be with. So somewhere along the line, that word was co-opted by the political agenda people. But they used that as an excuse to push the gay agenda. Harvey Milk came out of New York. Now, one of the interesting things we are hearing right now is the fight over don't ask, don't tell, the military's policy to dismiss or drum out open gay lesbians and I assume NAMBLAs, people who want to mess with children, and that is increasingly happening in all sectors of the military. I don't have the statistics on that, but I read the reports. Anyway, the objection is that, gay people can't serve. Well, here's one of the fictions. You will notice that some of the people who want to overturn Congress's Don't Ask, Don't Tell law are senior officers, guys who are retired, colonels, generals, admirals. How do you think if they were gay, they came in as gay or became homosexual while they were in the service or before they went into the service, how do you think they rose that high in the ranks, served their country? A lot of these guys did their duty in Vietnam, in Europe, South America, wherever they were sent. They served honorably. They went out, retired, got their salaries. So, if that was a problem and they behaved themselves, there was no problem. But here, get this. Harvey Milk, in his biography, went into the U.S. Navy at 17 and a half. He said at the time, or later on, it was said, one of his biographers said that he was always gay. So how is it that, and he served in the Navy honorably and was discharged and came to San Francisco. Now, how is it that he could serve in the Navy? He was gay since he was 17 and a half, so he said. And, he could serve in the Navy and be discharged honorably. So where was the problem, So this is the thing people ought to think about. The other thing is the security. Nobody is talking about all the scandals for the last 100 years in several countries. There have been military security breaches and scandals and treason and treachery involving homosexuals. The earliest case was the Captain Zola case in Captain Dreyfus case in France over 100 years ago, where a homosexual named Count von Schwarzkoppen, who was the military attaché of Germany at the time after the Franco-Prussian War, was persuaded by a guy named Esterhazy, another captain in the French army, who came in from descended from Hungarians, was selling military secrets trying to sell military secrets to the Germans. And that involved a cannon. The French are famous for light cannon. And in fact, Napoleon was their greatest general, was an artilleryman. And even Wellington, the great Duke of Wellington, admired the way the French handled their cannon when Napoleon was in the field fighting against them. But the secrets of that cannon were sold to Count von Schwarzkoppen, and they blamed Dreyfus, who was also a chilly man, independently wealthy, and they railroaded him onto Devil's Island. And it took him nearly 12 years to they drummed him out of the French army and to get his reputation back and to be restored honorably to the ranks. And they finally discovered that Esterhazy was the traitor, and not only that, he was running a male whorehouse in Paris, and he was involved with Oscar Wilde. I don't know the extent of it. That did come up. So those of you who are familiar with that case, and in fact, that is the only military case in which there have been more movies done about that case. There were three done in the United States. The latest was done with Richard Dreyfuss, who was a descendant, not a direct descendant, but a grand cousin, great cousin of Captain Dreyfuss, and that was done in the 90s. Great film, and one was done, the script was written by Gore Vidal for I think, Bell Telephone, and was on Turner Classic Movies. But anyway, and then we have, in World War One, the Germans, when we were fighting the Germans, which in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, they set up a male whorehouse, and they were trying to seduce sailors to get information on the munitions and the shipments to the Allies at that time. In fact, in World War II, this was going on, and a U.S. congressman was implicated, but he denied being involved, and, of course, the shadow always was over him. But one of the big fictions is that this is a recent, the military ban on homosexuals is recent. It's not. In the late 20s, in the Woodrow Wilson administration, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was an undersecretary of the U.S. Navy, and that was when he was still walking. He didn't get polio until later. And there was a scandal in Rhode Island at the YMCA and the Navy base there, where there was a ring of homosexuals and civilians operating prostitution and various other illegal activities. So there was a big court-martial, big scandal. It was Franklin Delano Roosevelt who issued the first order banning open gays at the time in the military, in the Navy, and then it spread across the others. And there have been guys who were dismissed over the years. But then the biggest scandal in recent times was the theft of the atomic bomb by Klaus Fuchs. I don't know if he was gay, East German communist, and the spy ring of the British, McLean and the other guy, who were British diplomats. They were homosexuals or bisexuals, and they helped steal the atomic bomb secrets, and Oppenheimer was blamed for security laxity at Los Alamos. So that was actually it was a more recent scandal, and that's with a British naval clerk named Vassal. He was homosexual. And, of course, there is the blackmail factor. One that I did forget was the Austrian case where the head of Austrian military security was gay, and he was compromising. He was selling military secrets, the Austrian military secrets, to the Russians. And the Russians, this was just before World War One, about the same time as the Dreyfus case. And he was caught and was given the Luger and told, you do it or we'll do it. So he blew his brains out. And there's a famous movie about that. Colonel Radel, that's his name, R-E-D-L, Colonel Radel. So we have these scandals on and off, over with various countries with this treachery business involving sexual misconduct. So that's where this origin comes from, and this is one of the fictions. Another fiction, political fiction that's come up is who really was the cause, or who really put Al Capone behind bars. Well, having worked in the old federal building in Chicago when I was just out of high school and in between college, I knew some of the people who were around at the time when Al Capone was prosecuted in that building. And it turns out that it wasn't Elliot Ness. You see this movie, The Untouchables, and the series by Walter Winchell, who was a scumbag in his own right. There's other stories about him. I'll get into it at a later date. But anyway, it wasn't Elliot Ness who busted Al Capone. I mean, this is a big fiction. What had happened was the publisher of the Chicago Tribune, Colonel Robert McCormick, he served in the U.S. Army in World War One, and he has if you ever go to Illinois, go to the Chicago area, if you like military museums, I highly recommend going out to Cattigny. It's the estate. It was named after the battle that Colonel McCormick was in World War One. But he was part of the McCormick Reaper family, and he owned the Chicago Tribune. He was conservative. He was tired of Chicago being shot up, and the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which everybody ought to have heard about that by now. What he did was he contacted President Hoover and said, send in some Treasury people and send in a squad to investigate Al Capone and try to put him behind bars. So they got a hold of Al Capone's books from all the liquor sales and the liquor that he was bringing in illegally from Canada. And it was a little Jewish accountant named Elmer Irey, I-R-E-Y, who went through the books, put the case together, and Al Capone was indicted and was going to be prosecuted in the federal courthouse in Chicago. Well, before the trial, Al Capone's people found out who was going to be on the jury list, and they bribed him. I tried to manipulate him. This happened before. John Gotti did this. So the federal judge at the time was a guy named John Wilkinson, and he found out about the bribery or the jury manipulation. He switched juries just before he started the trial, and that's how Al Capone was convicted, was tried fairly, and he ended up out here at Alcatraz in the middle of San Francisco Bay. And there's a famous movie which deals with this. It's the original Al Capone, a 1959 movie starring Martin Landau, who was one of the corrupt journalists in it. His name was Lingle. And then Rod Sterling played Al Capone. Great film. I highly recommend it, and it's fairly accurate, pretty accurate. So if you want to understand about how the mafia got control in the Midwest and around the country. And they also, I think it was Drew Raines on his show, Marines Disquisition, we talked about this, that the Chicago Mafia, or the Midwest Mafia, used to go to Hot Springs, Arkansas. I don't know what it is about that state, why they would go there, but that was one of their vacation spots. And then they had a spot in Wisconsin, too. And the joke today about a lot of this Wisconsin cheese, or some of it is suspected, that are mafia-controlled companies. And I know I'm going to get some flack about that, but I'm saying it's a speculation because the mob's connections to the dairy industry in Wisconsin. Now, what can you do about a lot of this? You read in the media, you hear all of this pro-gay, lesbian, left-wing agenda. Oh, here's the latest. There's a guy named Chip Burlett, who's also from Chicago. He was the vice president of the National Lawyers Guild. For those of you who don't know who they were, they're not the American Bar Association. They're the left-wing suspected communist front of left-wing lawyers, and a lot of them are crooked. Most infamous one was William Kunstler, who was out here in San Francisco in a cop murder case. And he taunted the family of the cop that was killed after he got his clients off who'd murdered a cop. Brodnick was his name. He said, "We're going to have a party." He went up to the widow and said, "You're invited," very sarcastically. So, that's one of the guys. And then the recent district attorney of San Francisco County, Terrence Hallinan, he's a member of was a member of the National Lawyers Guild. Should have been disbarred, but that's another story. But anyway, What he said on Fresh Air, which is a Terry Gross is a public radio, national NPR radio host daily. She has some interesting shows from time to time. She had on this guy who made a point of saying, "I'm with Public Research Associates. It's a Boston outfit." He didn't say it was set up by a lesbian named Jean Hardestry, who's also from Chicago, and she's got money, and she's funding these lesbian and gay agendas. Well, anyway, he makes incredible statements about the Obama, for instance. He said, "The people opposed to Obama are white racists." Well, that must be news to Alan Keyes, who, those of you who know who he is, he ran for president, and he happens to be coal jet black, jet coal black. That must be news to him that he's white. Maybe he has a white ancestor, a Caucasian ancestor, I don't know, and it really isn't relevant because he's a very intelligent and, I think, an honorable person so far as we know. There are other people, and this is how they operate. They try the left, and sometimes the right does this too. I'm going to be fair. I try to be fair. That when they can't defend their argument or they get challenged, they will attack you and say, you're a racist, you're a homophobe, you don't understand, you have no sympathy, you don't know what you're talking about. But, don't back down. If you're convinced that something is wrong and this is affecting you or will affect you or your children or people you care about or your country, you should stand up, speak out, and stand firm. Don't knuckle under. Remember, the meek don't inherit the earth. They inherit the dirt. And they'll be lucky to afford it, 6 feet of it. Anyway, this is one of the tactics that they use, and they use it very successfully. Another thing that's troubling is this 88-year-old Navy veteran, Mr. Von Braun. He's not related to Von Braun, the rocket scientist. There's a different spelling, and I don't think he's related. But anyway, what troubled me when I was looking at the news clips on cable TV I see this bright red car. And this guy's 88 years old, and I'm wondering, who would, if somebody was going to kill someone, why in broad daylight would they drive a bright red car to the site of the murder or the assassination? It doesn't make sense, unless the person has got got brain damage or something. And I'm wondering if this guy isn't brain damaged or he's just a white kamikaze. So, you know, it just troubled me. When I saw that red car, I said, God, that thing stands out. You know, and nobody's asked this question. Another question not being asked in the media, we see the students being brutalized in Tehran. And remember, 20 years ago this happened in Tiananmen Square. And what did the Red Communist government do? That student who stood in front of made a mistake of staying in front of one of the tracks of the tank, what did they do? They rolled right over him. What did the junta do in Burma? They brutally suppressed those students. And what is the theocracy doing in Tehran and other cities we hear? They're brutally putting down this insurrection, and they say they're going to make an example. I dread to think, because the Iranians, even under the Shah, brutally suppressed and tortured and did all kinds of horrible things to political opponents or people who wanted to try to acquire some democratic rights or that sort of thing. That was under the Shah's government, and they had a secret police called the SAWAK. And I happened to meet the son of one of the generals. Incidentally, it was interesting because he was gay, and he had to flee Iran at the time. But he had protection because his father was a general in the Iranian secret police under the Shah. But we met him at a political gathering years ago. But they said they're going to make an example of these students. Now, what's interesting in these three incidents that I just mentioned, Tiananmen Square, Burma, and Tehran, none of the protesters had guns. So that's something to think about. People who are pro-right to bear arms, a constitutional right, have always said, and people don't pay attention to this, that when they take away your right to own a firearm, you're vulnerable. And we've seen this also in Czechoslovakia, Iron Curtain countries. First thing the totalitarians do is they want to go around and gather up all the guns, so you can't fight back. So it's something for Americans and even Canadians who are getting kind of flaky up there should start thinking about. The other thing is that we don't know. Every time I rarely see, and I've monitored PBS, the cable stations, and other people have mentioned this, that who are these people? What class are these? The upper class, you know, who can afford to go to college in Iran? Are these the upper class youth who can afford to go to college? What about the people in the outlying cities? Iran has a population of approximately 70 million people. What are they doing? What is their position? Are they sitting on the fence, or are they hoping the students are successful, or what? Now, yesterday on PBS, also on Nick Lehrer's show, they had two Iranians, spoke very good English, and one said, look, at least 30% of the people in that last election, and everybody knows it was a fraud, voted for Ahmadinejad, I can never pronounce that horrible name, but voted for the mullah's man. That would be the easiest way to say it, the mullah's man. And so obviously some people did vote for him, even though the people were going to the polls in Iran, and the mullahs had already called the election. So we know there was fraud, and they probably learned from here in the States how to rig an election, Chicago, San Francisco, New York, Tammany Hall, that kind of thing. You know, these people they learn very well from others. But there is a concern that, hey, this may not be a so-called popular uprising. And I hate to say this, but maybe Obama is right on this, what can we do, or if we are doing something, to be quiet about it. So there are people who are objecting that our people are in there stirring up, trouble for the mullahs. Personally, I don't believe in theocracy, and that's the problem we have in Israel. They're trying to establish a theocracy there, or they have part of it, and the rabbis have a disproportionate influence over the government and the culture of the country. And this new generation of Israelis and the ones who have immigrated from, like, America are objecting to this. I mean, they even have pizza parlors in Israel, and they're serving pork. So that should tell you something. So as each new generation becomes of age, they become more aware, and they demand their rights. And of course, today, this is something we didn't even see as much in the Burmese uprising. We're seeing daily and regular media flows from these cell phones and these iPods, and the Iranians, and they're using third-party, transmitters, so that there is tracking. You can track what people watch on their individual computer. Governments can do that. The I think it's called the Echelon technique, which was developed by our government and was sold to the Chinese. That's how they can control or try to control what Chinese people are watching on their computers, and they can block it. So this is what the Iranians are trying to do to prevent this information from getting out, from being broadcast out. So this is something different that we're seeing, what I call the latest phase of the Gutenberg Revolution. In fact, I jokingly say to my other media friends that if Gutenberg were alive today, he's the guy who invented the printing press back in the, I think, 14th century, and in fact broke the monopoly of the Catholic monks, because the monks were the ones, they were the printers. They did the books by hand in those days, and they were the ones who controlled the media of that time. You had the town crier, but he couldn't cry unless announce anything unless it was written out or printed. And a lot of these guys were illiterate. But Gutenberg invented the printing press, and that started it. Once the printing press was developed into the Mergenthaler press, and we had all the other communication aspects, the telephone, the telegraph, radio, TV. In fact, here's something interesting. This is a political fact. The Germans, the Nazis, were the first ones to do, one of the first. We may have had, DeForest may have done the guy that invented the tube, may have done a limited TV broadcast. In fact, one of them lived here in San Francisco. It's something that's not well known. But the Germans had done, and I have a copy, we obtained a copy for our archives, our audiovisual historical archives, of the first German TV broadcast. It's kind of hokey, but they were very good at propaganda. And we're seeing this today, that the people on a lot of these political parties, the consultants that rely on media people, they have learned very well from Joseph Goebbels, the guy who handled the image of Adolf Hitler and the rest of the Nazis. So a lot of this stuff is not new. It's just they've learned, and they keep improving on it with the new technology. So we have to be aware of that. And I hear, some of my generation now, and I'm pushing senior citizen status, and they say, oh, I don't want to deal with the Internet. It's some people who are fundamentally religious say, oh, it's a tool of the devil and all that. Well, I'm not going to argue with them. I have a saying that you can offer food and water to an animal, but if you try to force it on them, it's cruelty to animals. So I'm not going to do that. And another one of my sayings is, if people don't recognize a pearl, then they may as well be a swine, because swine don't recognize pearls of wisdom. And that's why they get into trouble. That's more harsh application. But don't try to force things on people who don't want to listen or will not listen or are up in your face. But, stand firm by your beliefs and try to be aware. Use the technology and use it well. There's nothing wrong with it. Maybe some in the future, in another 100 years, if the world is still around, we may be able to do mental telepathy. You won't need these external devices. You'll just be able to transmit your thoughts to another person or direct them to another person or a group by means of mental telepathy. It may happen. I don't know. There are people, and you must know some people, who you get the idea that they know what you're thinking at a given point. And maybe they don't realize that they have this rare ability, because there are some people who engage successfully in mental telepathy. I've known a few, but it's something that still needs to be developed. I don't know if somebody's trying to call in or what. I see one call. But anyway, here's the phone number again, 1-347 633-9620. Also, all the shows on Blog Talk Network are archived, so if you are having problems with transmission or reception, or you want to come back to this, and I hope it's going to be archived. I checked last week. Part of it was. It's archived, so you can listen at your leisure or download at your leisure. And I'd recommend, there's some good programs on this network, and I'd recommend, those of you who don't know, Drew Raines is a Marine Disquisition, which I'm on sometimes. So he's got a lot of stuff, and also on his website. Incidentally, talking about websites. I just put up on my YouTube, Amicus Veritas, AmiCusVeritas, a Russian diplomat's tips on avoiding a hangover. And I discovered this when I used to go to consular affairs and do my share of drinking. And I've been to, not the Russian consulate, but Australian, and they are great drinkers, Canadian, Chinese, I got drunk there on something there, they didn't tell me, and New Zealand, they had some great wines. But I learned from a Russian diplomat, I said, you guys ever end up in the gulag? We were just joking, and this was off the air. And he said, I'll tell you a story. There have been diplomats, and you should know this, that they get drunk, they embarrass the Soviet Union. They have their diplomatic immunity yanked, and we've had cases, which I have on my website, the most recent one, where a diplomat in Canada got drunk, drove his car, killed a Canadian lawyer named Mrs. McLean or Miss McLean, and he had his. They wanted to prosecute him in Canada, but they couldn't because this is another thing: a diplomat cannot be prosecuted by the host country unless there's a special agreement. There's usually not. Because they worry about their diplomat being treated fairly in the country where he violated their laws. So what happens is the country that sent the diplomat has to give their permission and yank diplomatic immunity so it can be prosecuted. I don't know if any women have been prosecuted, but several men have been prosecuted for violating American laws. One guy in Virginia had his yanked, and he's serving time in a Virginia prison, or he may be out by now. Drunk driving, killed somebody. We had a case in Connecticut, similar. But anyway, in this one case, the guy had his diplomatic immunity yanked. He was recalled to Russia, was tried by a Russian court, and sent to a low-level prison for 4 years. So what the diplomat said to me, here's how I avoid getting a hangover. I drink a small glass of olive oil before I go out drinking or to a function. Now, the olive oil is known as part of the Mediterranean medicine. Olive oil is used in all of these countries, Greece, Spain, Portugal, Italy, and it's part of their regular diet, and it may help your heart. But anyway, if you can't afford olive oil, other oils will do, corn oil, soybean oil. And then what it does is, and I've tried it many times because I'm a drinker, it coats your stomach. And incidentally, don't drink on an empty stomach. It's not a good idea. Coat your stomach, and if you do drink, it prevents your system to a great extent from absorbing all the alcohol and getting a headache. So I'd recommend that. And also, if you can't get olive oil or any of the oils, try eating something greasy like French fries or potato chips, because you're going to have to eat a lot of them. But also, there's another factor, and I do have this on the website, on the YouTube site, that you consider your ethnic background. Now, one of the problems with drinking and alcoholism in America, this puritanical mentality, is that we don't teach our kids how to drink. Now, Jewish families, Italian, Hispanic families, they teach their kids how to drink. You know, a small glass of wine, probably in water, and that's how they learn to drink. And so when by the time they're 18 and of the legal age, they know how to drink or should know how to drink. But also, if you've got Native American blood, you have to be careful because I think a gene is missing or there's something like that. They also have a problem with milk. And you have to be careful that they have a greater predilection to become drunk. That's just why we see a lot of Native Americans who suffer from alcoholism. So I would recommend that, you check out your background. And of course, there are people, who can handle it better than other people. I can't handle beer. I never drink beer anymore. I used to, but I got sick. But I can drink wine. So I like my vodka. So I would recommend you go to that website, go to that AmiCusVeritas on YouTube, and I have other things. Another thing that's troubling, here's a tip. If you're driving after a rush hour, there are practically in every city in this major city in this country, there are no turn on red traffic signs, and you're sitting there burning gas. For those of you concerned about carbon footprints, I still don't know what that is, but you know there's something coming out of your tailpipe, and it ain't farts. You're adding the sulfur to the air. So, and there's no traffic. But if you go through, if you violate that no turn on red or no right turn on red, and there's a cop around the corner and he needs to make his ticket quota, and that's illegal, but they do it, you're going to get a $100 ticket. So this makes no sense. I would suggest to people out there, this is something you can easily do, that you go, you complain to your inquire of your city traffic department or the mayor's office or your local city council or board of selectmen, whatever, aldermen, and say, hey, let's review of some of these signs. Now, some of them are necessary. No turn on red during heavy traffic patterns, during rush hour, like downtown areas. But, I mean, say you're traveling on the weekend or after 7 o'clock at night, and these signs, some are 24 hours, and there's no traffic. So it makes no sense. It wastes gas, and, you know, gas is going up. It's like over $3 here in the Bay Area in California. And you're wasting time, and, you know, you're adding to the pollution in the air if you subscribe to the green movement. So that's something that you can easily do. I suggest you do that. Those of you who are concerned about the public schools, I did bring this up last time, that what you should do is say, okay, there's a money problem. We're having more students, and they're not passing. You're firing firing teachers, laying off teachers. What about the administrators? What about these assistant principals? What do they do? Has there been any cost analysis efficiency studies of the value of these people? Are they worth what we're paying them? Should they be? A lot of them came out of the classroom. Some of them should have stayed out. But, you know, having been in the San Francisco Unified School District, I could tell you horror stories. For instance, one superintendent, Robert Aliotto, late Robert Aliotto, came from Yonkers, New York. He burned all his records before he left. Well, they hired him in San Francisco. This is back in the 80s. And the first thing he did was he used school district administrators, a couple of them, when there was an election for a school board member, he'd have them go around and collect political campaign contributions from teachers. This is illegal, but if they wanted their job, they didn't want to be transferred to a ghetto school or whatever. He knew how to work this system. They kicked into the kitty. And, of course, the administrators didn't say, you have to donate X amount of dollars. They showed up, and the teachers knew why they were there, and it was a silent acquisition that, hey, we know why you're here, and we want to keep our job. Here's the money. It was done that way, and that goes on. So it may be going on in other school districts around the country, but it's up to you. And you, again, you don't have to have kids in the school. You don't have to even be a parent. You can be sending your kids to private school or those charter schools. But your taxes pay for all the schools and universities. So that's your interest. That ought to be your interest. So that's something that you can do. And also, you can attend these school board meetings. I would advise getting a hold of the agenda beforehand so you can focus in on agenda items that would be of interest to you. And if you know other people, you've got a network. That's, you know, otherwise they just pick you up. That's why we get some of the politicians we get, because they know how to network their, you know, build their constituencies. And that's how they get reelected and stay in office. And that's why an individual who might want to stand up and speak out, you know, gets shot down because he doesn't have any backup. He doesn't have people around him who supports the positions that he or she supports. Here's something of interest. Those of you who didn't follow the British Parliament, what happened over there, the big scandal, very similar to what's been going on in our Congress and our legislatures. The Speaker of the British House of Parliament, House of Commons, which is like their U.S. House of Representatives, this guy named Mike Martin, older guy, been there, respected. Well, he tolerated the corruption scandal that's going on in the British Parliament, where representatives were spending money on pornography, gardening, things that were, one I think was a hooker, things that were not related to their parliamentary duties. So they ousted him. So he resigned Monday, I think. Well, could it be that the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives here, with all the scandals dogging her, Nancy Pelosi, Will she, she's up for re-election, I think next year. Will she just quietly go away and spend time with her asses, of which she has a lot? So, you know, or maybe they'll remove her. Now, they have removed speakers of the U.S. House of Representatives. People have been forced out. But the most notorious case happened about 100 years ago by a guy named Uncle Joe Cannon. He was from Illinois. He was a tyrant, and they finally got tired of his tyranny and forced him out of the speaker's chair. So, you know, it could very well happen because I think there is a mood. I mean, we've been told by the Obama people, change, change, change. So, you know, let's make some changes. You know, and these are people, they're not indispensable. If Nancy Pelosi was to drop dead tomorrow or end up, she's flying one of those Air France, well, she's probably flying military aircraft, which is questionable. You know, it goes down and she dies, the world isn't going to stop on its axis. Life goes on. Nobody is indispensable. Life goes on. And people should realize that there's always somebody in the waiting in the wings who can step into the shoes and step into the job, and if they don't know everything, they'll learn it fast if they want to survive. So, and they can be replaced if they don't live up to expectations. So, you know, this is something that, you know, nobody is indispensable. The other thing is, this was brought up on McNeil Lair, and it's interesting. This whole business about this infatuation by the, what I call the corporate media, and even the alternative media. By corporate media, I mean the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, the L.A. Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, your big city papers, that those that are left, and even the alternative media like the Bay Guardian, the Village Voice, San Francisco Weekly. These are, you know, your alternative papers, your freebies. They had this infatuation. Well, not so much the SF Weekly. They're kind of funny. But anyway, they had this, and the New Examiner. The Examiner has been bought by a guy named Angelus, a wealthy multimillionaire out of Denver, and it's a free paper, and it's much better if you've seen it, and it's around the country. It's the Examiner, and they use the name of the old Hearst Examiner, which was sold twice before he got it. But anyway, you know, there's this infatuation. There is this fear to criticize, and I think what this is, having been in the media, and still am, still are, but in a different sector, what I think it is that they are afraid to criticize a black man or an ethnic. This also extends, I've noticed, with corrupt women. They are afraid to criticize these women. They are also afraid, some of them are afraid to criticize homosexuals, gays, lesbians, NAMLAs, and the transgenders who are violating laws, who are not accounting for the millions of dollars that they've gotten, federal AIDS funds, housing, and all of that. So there's this double or triple standard. Now, isn't it interesting? The governor of South Carolina, Stanford, he had this affair with this Argentinian woman. That's a long way to go for an affair. But anyway, he admitted it. He came out, no pun intended, and said he made a big mistake. And, you know, I hope he works it out with his family. But isn't it interesting, you know, that we have Barney Frank, a representative from Massachusetts, who ran a pedophile ring, or prostitution ring in Congress, or connected to Congress somehow. And he had another congressman, a guy named Gary Studs, late and unlamented. He was another one of the gay boys. And Barney Frank was one of his lovers at the time, was involved in this Freddie Mac scandal. And here this guy sitting on as chairman of the House Banking Committee, no shame, I'm sorry I did this, I will clean up my act. You know, have you? And does the media talk about this? No. What may be one of the factors in this may be the fact that his sister is Ann Lewis, who is a big Democratic Party chieftain. I think she's the head of one of the big committees. And her son died mysteriously in an area, a gay area, in one of the parks, I think in Washington or Philadelphia, one of them, or back east, and he never got the full story on that. So, I mean, maybe that's his juice, maybe that's his protection. But it's different when these people do things, but when a Republican, a guy like Sanford, and he made a mistake, but, who out there hasn't? And I'm sure there are guys who are married, who fooled around, and, cheated on their wives, or wives cheating on their husbands, and what have you, and even doing other things. But they make a mistake, they clean up their act, and they move on. You know, nobody walks on water. If you think somebody walks on water, this is another one of my phrases. If you think somebody walks on water, check the source, check the depth, check the temperature, check the pollution level, and check downstream and upstream. So, you know, there's no Mother Teresa's out there, you know, in politics, in the media, or in the corporate world, in the theater. Incidentally, the guy who won the screenwriting award, Lance Black, for the film Milk, he has just been exposed, literally and figuratively, by in a homosexual video. And what's even worse about this video, the pictures are disgusting, it just showed up, that he's engaged in bareback sex. That means he didn't use a condom in his anal relationships, let's put it that way. And, you know, if they're going to give an award to a guy like this, I mean, what's the matter with Hollywood? How low can they sink? But this is something to think about, you know, that these moral eunuchs who are influencing our entertainment. And that noise you hear in the background, there's nothing I can do about it. I wish I could have them take care of some of the bad people in this world. That is the local garbage people. And they come around this hour. I can't get a change, but it's great what they say, actualities, because some of these people are in the garbage. These are the people who violate laws, who take advantage of people who they think cannot fight back or will not fight back. And, you know, they're bullies, and we see this all the time, and the media tolerates it, and the people who should have, who should take responsibility for getting the information out and being fair and honest about it and equal, don't do anything, and they cover it up. They lie, they distort, they omit, and what they can't do, and when that's when they can't censor and suppress. You know, if we saw all the stories that were censored and suppressed, you'd want to get your pistola and go to the press rooms of some of these papers, the studios of some of these news organizations, and start shooting up the place or driving the people out of the, you know, purging them permanently, sending them into exile, whatever. I think people would react that way when they find out all the things that have happened. So, you know, it's up to you. I'm trying to be relevant. If you have suggestions, go to my website, amicusveritas.org. My email is pverzola, P-V-E-R-Z-O-L-A, @gmail.com. You can email me there with suggestions, criticisms, anything else, anything you're interested in. I'm limiting my topics to what's on what I publish weekly. And, you know, and I will try to get to master this new technology to get up these audio clips that people have been bugging me about, and I told them I have them, but I haven't been able to figure out how to use the system quite, or I still had a software problem. It's almost fixed. So I want to thank you for listening, and hopefully excuse me, getting a little hoarse there. We'll be on the air next week. I hope to have a rare recording of the original Le Marcier. I happen to come across it for our video archives, and all those audio clips from the famous people that I did interviews of for public radio. As soon as I get the software fixed and get the kinks out, this new software, I hope we'll be able to put them up. And also, I have got to figure out how to get these guests in on this program. I did line up a couple. So I wanted to thank you people for listening, those of you who heard it, and, you know, feel free to contact me via the email. Go to my YouTube. I have the Google, too, but they're all being shown on YouTube. And there are things that I talk about or have talked about and have made suggestions about, and I hope that, you know, it's helpful to you. And, again, this is another thing. You know, stand up. Be a man. Be a woman. And if you ask for something, if you ask for something, expect and receive it. So, again, don't roll over. Like I said, people who complain behind these politicians, these media people's back, you know, they're just going to walk over you. So remember that the meek inherit not the earth, but the dirt. And if they can afford 6 feet of it, that's what they'll get. So I don't, recommend that. But if you want to be a human being that has rights and assert those rights, and you have an obligation to yourself as well as to your children, your family, and your country, to assert those rights and those responsibilities. Because if we didn't have these rights, I wouldn't be talking to you, and you wouldn't be listening to this show, other shows. And so, what more can I say for this episode of The New Shadow? And we'll be bringing more exposés. Thank you for listening, and go view.